Hey guys, welcome back to Unpopular. What's going on? I am back very soon. I usually space these episodes out a little bit more, but I had Easter weekend off. I'm not doing anything. I'm feeling chatty, so let's get into it. I do have some personal news to share before we get into the hot topics. So I bravely turned my Instagram story replies back on for about, 8 hours before they went off again. You guys know that I have been on a little bit of a Selena Gomez social media break from that for a while. It's been amazing for my mindset. I'm not getting distracted by having to obsessively clear out my inbox all the time. But I just thought, let's switch it on and see what happens. Everyone was really nice, right? I got one weird troll that was like, "You are trash. Go back to where you came from." I'm like, okay, whatever. You know why I had to turn them back off? And this isn't singling out anybody because a lot of you did this, so it wasn't just one person. So I posted this like funny, meme or whatever from Twitter, from X. And it was Gypsy Rose. She's broken up with her man, which I'm very sad about, by the way. I was rooting for them. I always root for an unconventional love story. You know, I love a couple that are facing the odds, like Jeffrey and Sarah Ann from Love is Blind. I also wanted Jimmy and Chelsea to work out. And she's back on the market. And then someone obviously like photoshopped a photo of Pete Davidson with Gypsy Rose. And it was like, damn, like, Pete Davidson doesn't waste any time, something like that. Like, it was funny. The photo looked funny. So I posted it on my Instagram stories. So many people were responding, "Wait, is this real? Wait, are they dating?" That's when I was like, I'm fucking turning this shit back off, because I totally forgot that whole aspect of leaving Instagram open, that you can't joke about anything, because people literally, like, they just take it so literally. And I know Ryan Bailey, shout out Ryan Bailey, I'm supposed to go back on his show soon, which I can't wait for. He does a lot of like memes and, you know, funny posts on his page, and I've noticed that he tends to have to kind of like explain the joke in the meme or in the caption. And I know why he's doing it. It's because if he doesn't, he will get, because he has like a lot of followers, he'll probably get 100 comments of people going, "Wait, is this true? Did this happen?" It's like, I don't know what to do. Like, I it's above my pay grade to have to explain to you that Pete Davidson and Gypsy Rose aren't actually dating. You know, like, that can't be my life. That can't be how I'm spending my time on social media. I cannot explain individually to 10 different people that Pete Davidson is not dating Gypsy Rose on a very obviously photoshopped image that is clearly a joke. So that's why they went back off. But you know what? I might turn them on every now and then for a little while and then like shut them off. We'll see. I'm dipping my toe back in. What I will talk about is Cowboy Carter, the new Beyoncé album. I felt weird even putting it on. I listened to it yesterday because I knew that I was only listening to it for podcast content, honestly. Like, I have no interest in Beyoncé. I do like to shade her and I get a kick out of it. And I've been a Beyoncé truther from day one, back when I was a music blogger, and I would expose all of her fake songwriting credits and how much she would lie and everything. But, you know, these days I just don't follow her that much or really care about her. So normally, you know, a Beyoncé album in my world would just come and go and I wouldn't be part of the hoopla around it. You know, I didn't even listen to the last one, the dance record Renaissance, until maybe like a year and a half later after it came out. And that's because I was on X one day and someone did an AI cover where it was like Taylor Swift singing one of the songs from Renaissance. So I heard that, and then that kind of like intrigued me to check out Renaissance. She's just not on my radar. And I remember when I used to like really go hard on Beyoncé and, you know, expose all of her bullshit when I was a blogger, and people would be like, "You're secretly a fan of her. You love her. Oh my God, you're obsessed with her." It was like, once I stopped blogging, like, she ceased to exist for me. Like, I didn't listen to the music. I didn't follow anything about her. Like, I find her very boring, which is why I don't like, I mean, the most interesting thing to me about her is just kind of like the marketing and how much she's able to create a sort of false image to make up for what her personality lacks. And, you know, there's this whole performative display that you have to do whenever Beyoncé does anything. Like, her marketing team has really brainwashed a lot of people into seeing her as not just like a pop star, which she is. She's like a talented pop artist. So, you know, good for her. But her marketing team has made it as if she is the most defining, most important cultural icon of her generation, which just is not true. But we all have to pretend that it is. Like, Lana Del Rey and Rihanna have been way more influential on the culture than Beyoncé, but we all are expected to sort of do this, like, dog and pony show about Beyoncé and fall out and scream and be hysterical and rip our hair out and, you know, fly around like we're fucking Linda Blair in The Exorcist if she even moves a pinky finger, and say that her Super Bowl performance was the greatest performance in the history of music. I mean, it's just absolutely ridiculous. And every time she comes out and I see everybody doing this, I'm like, do you actually believe this? Or is this just, do you just like feel like you're supposed to be doing this, or are you just a sheep and you haven't kind of really thought about it, and it's just like the gushing think pieces have programmed you to behave in this manner every time she does something? Anyway, she's beautiful, she's talented, you know, but she has no personality. She's just an empty kind of robot. And the marketing is amazing because they have turned all of her weaknesses into strengths. And you know, people now see her as like kind of classy and mysterious and so much of like an authentic artist that she doesn't need to speak to the press or behave in a relatable manner. But the truth is, it's just, she's like boring and dull. Like, if you watch an interview with her, and you'll see she's not very articulate, like she's not interesting, like there's not much going on there. And it's kind of become more annoying, the whole Beyoncé phenomenon, in the last like 5 to 10 years, because of all the racial politics around her, which she and her team definitely kind of created and feed into and push. So like the last album, she had to pretend she was paying homage to like queer dance music. I know that I've talked about this before because I did a Beyoncé episode not that long ago, actually. So forgive me for repeating myself. But, you know, she's never been part of gay music, dance music, you know, underground trans clubs or whatever the hell she was supposed to be paying tribute to on that album, even though you read like the reviews and the think pieces around it and they act like she was there at like Stonewall when it happened. I mean, it was just so stupid. And, you know, it was just like a dance record to get back on the radio because she hadn't had a hit for a long time. Not an important artistic statement on queer liberation. And, you know, her albums, they are called Act 1 and Act 2, Renaissance, Act 1, Renaissance, Act 2, because, like, it's an act. Like, she's not a real person. Like, these are just characters she's playing for each album. Now, with Cowboy Carter, the sort of narrative that's been formed is that black people invented country music and, you know, she's taking it back for the culture because, you know, post 2014, the only thing that white people invented is colonialism and, you know, racism and oppression, while black and brown queer people created all culture. They did every hairstyle, every music genre. They invented space travel, if you've seen Hidden Figures. I mean, the list is endless. We may as well just exterminate the Caucasian race as it is and hand it over to the black trans women of color. I mean, they invented the light bulb. They invented electricity. They actually made running water. I don't know if you know that, but yeah, we have running water that's drinkable because of queer women of color that perform in transgender clubs. So a lot of the early marketing for Cowboy Carter was this like fake story about how the country music community is just so racist that they wouldn't play Texas Hold'em. Meanwhile, like the song is like skyrocketing up the country charts and is like number one, as they're saying that like the country people won't embrace her. They won't play her on radio. I mean, that started because some Beyonce stan, within about like 6 hours of Texas Hold'em coming out, they emailed like the most country radio station and said, are you playing the new Beyonce song? And the person from the radio station was like, we don't play Beyonce, because they're just assuming that she's doing, you know, pop and R&B. Like, not everyone is tapped into everything that she's doing. So people that are actually in the country music industry aren't really, yeah, especially at that point when the singles only just came out, like all of a sudden, they're not tapped into Beyonce's doing a country album where she's going to, you know, wear a silver thong and pose naked in a cowboy hat to like a catchy country pop ditty. Like, they don't know that. So the person wrote back and just said, no, we don't play Beyonce here. And then that went viral. And then suddenly it turned into racist radio won't play Beyonce's country record. Of course, fast forward like a week and it's like number one at country radio, as if country radio doesn't play pop songs. Like, have you guys listened to mainstream country radio? Like, most of it's just like pop. Like, it's complete crap, you know, like it's hard to actually get like real country music. Like, I think you have to go to the more like indie or like smaller country stations to get that. But if you listen to like the, you know, fucking 105 Country FM, it's like Florida Georgia Line and all of, you know, Maren Morris and that kind of shit. And, you know, every genre of music is hostile to outsiders. Like, look at gay stan Twitter pop music fans. Like, they are horrible to country music in particular. I mean, they see it all as just like redneck trash, you know, so it goes always. Like, every little community of music, like indie music doesn't like, you know, pop music doesn't like indie music, country fans don't like hip hop fans don't like country, the list goes on. People just get in their fucking little bubbles of things and don't have like a broad taste in anything, because people are just basic. Like, that's just the truth. You know, the gay pop fans, unless it's like Kacey Musgraves or Maren Morris, like doing an Avicii dance song, they will just bash country all day and all night. But now suddenly they pretend they love country, which is hilarious. Oh, Beyonce did a country album. Oh, yeehaw, yeehaw. And they'll like buy like a pink cowboy hat, and then they'll zero in on the least country sounding song on the album, and then do this like weird country cosplay to it. Anyway, as far as the album itself, Cowboy Carter, is it any good? So I've given it 2 spins, and the first time I put it on, I really felt like it was just shockingly bad. I was like, oh my god, this is so cheesy. You know, I couldn't even get through it. Texted Dan and was like, wow, this is like bad. And I really love the song 16 Carriages. And actually, Texas Hold'em, I kind of bashed that when it came out, but it's been in my head since it came out, and I don't even listen to it. Like, I do not listen to it, and it's in my head constantly. So, you know, that's a skill to have a song that gets stuck in your head. So shout out to Texas Hold'em, and I do love 16 Carriages. So I was expecting the record to, you know, be better than I thought. And I was like, God, I'm going to have to begrudgingly say this is good. And I hated it. And then I was like, let me give it another shot properly. And I sat down, got a cup of coffee, listened to it all the way through to soak up the vibe. That's how I judge. There's 2 ways that I judge music, okay? Because you guys know that I listen to a lot of K-pop. So with the K-pop, I just need it to be like fun and catchy and, you know, like well-produced, etc. Anything kind of outside of that, because K-pop is like my pop lane, so anything outside of K-pop, I really just like a vibe. I like all the songs, especially like with an album, to kind of like blend into each other, and I like to just kind of get like lost in the whole thing. So I was soaking up Cowboy Carter, and second spin, I liked it a lot more, especially the second half of the album, which I kind of like didn't get to the first time because I just turned it off so quickly. It's really eclectic, and there's a lot of genre mashing, which I love. I love people like putting different genres together. Again, that's one reason I like K-pop, because it'll switch things up and drop in like weird little twists that a lot of American pop songs won't do because they're way too conventional. And, you know, Japan takes it to a whole different level. So yeah, there's a lot of genre mashing on this. So they have like modern country, they have bluegrass, and they have R&B, they have hip hop, there's heaps of samples. And Justin Timberlake does do this a bit too. Like, I know I haven't listened to his new album, which, you know, I love JT and I'm a JT defender. I'm assuming from what I've seen from the latest album that it's kind of just like, you know, soccer mom pop, which is, you know, fine. But it's not really something I'm in the mood to listen to these days. But Justin tries to do this thing where he'll do like the Timbaland beats, but then he'll put like a fucking, you know, banjo over it and put a little bit of his like Tennessee roots in there. But I think Beyonce's kind of done a better job at it. No shade to JT. Love my man JT. But Beyonce has executed this at on a more premium kind of level. A lot of the samples are very obvious, like there's Nancy Sinatra, Beach Boys, the Jolene cover, which I'm going to get into, but the samples are done really well. One of them has Patsy Cline's I Fall to Pieces, but it's like an urban track, which I thought was really, really cool. And I'm a huge Patsy Cline fan. Like, I absolutely love her. I rate kind of like Patsy, Whitney Houston, Karen Carpenter. They're like up there as my top like vocalists of all time. So huge fan of Patsy. And I loved that she chose I Fall to Pieces instead of Crazy, because Crazy is like just so obvious in the same way that Jolene is so obvious. So it's like, okay, cool. Like, you tried to do like a lesser known Patsy single. So shout out for that. It was a really good song. I do not like the Jolene cover at all. I think it kind of represents the worst parts of the album, like the most like very obvious pandering, like made for radio stuff on there. The songs that are the best are the ones that are either more experimental in their genre mashing or just not so much made for radio. Like the songs that they put on there to be singles, they're kind of just a little cheesy to me. Although again, Texas Hold'em is, you know, one of those, and it's been stuck in my head, so I don't know how much I can really hate on it. But I feel like, especially with Jolene, like, that is just so cliched. And she really had the chance to highlight a lesser known Dolly song, and she really was like, no, I'm going to go for literally the most safest, obvious choice possible. And she mostly did it, I think. One, because I don't think she wanted to take a risk. And two, she wanted to use it to generate headlines about her marriage, which she does every time she releases an album. There's some reference to her relationship. So her marketing strategy is that she never shares anything about her personal life. And then when an album comes out, there'll be like little Easter eggs in there. And it's very intentional. And Taylor Swift does this too, to a more extreme level. And Taylor Swift is a lot more obvious about it. But Beyonce has been doing that ever since Single Ladies. She didn't confirm if she was married, I remember. And then she dropped Single Ladies and it was like, oh my God, Beyonce references her marriage. And then like every album after that would have some kind of like Jay-Z thing, especially after the fight in the elevator at the Met Gala. So yeah, I can see what you're doing, B. You're not slick. I think she should have covered, and even before I'd heard the Jolene cover, I thought she should have done Johnny Cash instead. And Johnny Cash is also kind of obvious, like, you know, he is a household name as well. And especially if she did a song like Ring of Fire or Hurt, which, you know, that's a Nine Inch Nails song, but the Johnny Cash cover is so famous. I think it won a Grammy. But for her audience, which is like gay white pop fans, it's black R&B fans, and then it's crazy Brazilians. Those are like the three core of her audience. And that would have exposed them to something very new, because Johnny Cash is more of an artist for like straight white people, pretty much, especially straight white men. Whereas like every single pop fan on the planet knows Jolene. Like, it's the quintessential crossover country song that goes over generations, and I think she could have done better than that. Also, girl, you're not going to outdo the Miley Cyrus Backyard Session cover of Jolene. Like, that's the number one pop star cover of Jolene, so I don't know why you would even try. And actually, she has a duet, Beyonce has a duet with Miley on the album, and Miley sounds way better than Beyonce, even though Beyonce technically, you know, has a better voice in terms of, you know, the notes and stuff that she can hit. Miley Cyrus's voice is like made for country, and she grew up like singing country, and like Dolly is her godmother. And you can just, Miley sings with so much more authenticity than Beyonce as well. So I kind of thought that was like, that Beyonce clowned herself a little bit by duetting with Miley, because it's like, girl, Miley is like showing you up. Yeah, I would have chose someone else, not Miley, but I get it. That's another one of those, like, that's a song for the radio. That's a song to kind of generate noise and to be a single and to signal to the pop fans that, like, no, it's okay. Like, you're allowed to listen to this. I'm not doing, like, Lucinda Williams. Okay, this isn't, like, deep country cuts. Like, it's fine. Like, I've got Miley on here and one of the songs has a rap beat. So, like, please, you're allowed to listen. Overall, I like the album, definitely. Like, I'll admit it. As much as I like to drag and roast Beyonce, I really like it. I'm glad I didn't write it off. I'm glad I circled back to it. I think it's way better than the dance record that she did, the first Renaissance. This one's much better. And, like, it's easy to make fun of Beyonce this era because, you know, she's doing her, like, Lady Gaga Joanne thing where she's walking around in a fucking cowboy hat everywhere, and then you've got, like, the race war discourse around it, which is so fucking annoying, and the think pieces and the screeching tweets from her fans. But I think this album is going to age pretty well. And one thing that I really like when I dive into, like, a pop diva's discography, you know, like a pop star that's been around for a really long time, and you go over, like, their old shit and you'll be like, wow, I didn't know that so-and-so did a R&B album in 1993. Like, even if it's, like, not that good, it's just kind of like, oh, they, you know, did, like, different genres. Like, it's fun. And usually the genres that they do reflect the time of, you know, what everyone was doing. Like, if you look at Janet Jackson, for example, when indie music was bigger, she did a less kind of commercial album with The Velvet Rope. And then when she followed up with All For You, that was a lot more like bubblegum, because that was sort of when, like, the whole Britney Spears and Backstreet Boys thing was happening. So everybody does that. Even Dolly Parton, she did some, like, pop and rock albums in the 80s when she was crossing over. Madonna, of course, is, like, the queen of this. This is why Madonna's the queen of pop and no one can really rival her, because, you know, she just morphed herself into whatever was, like, required at the time, and she's still reinventing herself and, you know, doing interesting different things. Miley Cyrus is maybe the closest to, like, a modern Madonna, I think, as far as having, like, a really diverse and interesting, like, discography. Like, if you listen to the Dead Pets album, which is so weird and experimental, but when people are looking back at Miley's discography in, like, years to come, that'll stand out, like, oh my God, I can't believe she, like, did this kind of album. And then she did, like, a country-tinged album, and she's done the one with, like, the 80s pop stuff, and she did one that was, like, a little meant to be a little bit more alternative. It was her, like, you know, woke, like, Trump feminist era. So it's just, like, fun to look back at that and see albums that reflect where someone was in their life and where, like, the culture was at large. So I think that this album for Beyonce is going to age well. I'll give her flowers. And even I think the Renaissance Part 1, which I really don't like, I think that'll be another one that'll age well, because then when people are going back over all of Beyonce's albums, it'll be like, yeah, and then in 2022, like, she had, like, a, you know, a campy dance album for, you know, the gays, right? Instead of having so much R&B and all of that in her discography. Now, is Cowboy Carter gonna be better than, like, Lana Del Rey's upcoming country album? No, obviously. Like, Cowboy Carter is an interesting pop record, and pop is a broad term, because, like, people like to think when you say pop, I still feel like Britney Spears is, like, kind of the face of pop. Again, that's why Britney Spears is so iconic, because if you say pop music, you kind of just think of Britney Spears, even though she actually hasn't had a hit song in how long has it been since Britney had a hit? Like, 10 or 15 years, and she's had all these struggles and stuff. But people just think of, like, bubblegum pop, but pop just means popular, right? And, like, kind of radio friendly. And Cowboy Carter, it is, like, it does have actual country songs for sure. It has authentic country influences. There's, you know, collaborations with, you know, Willie Nelson and Dolly Parton. They're very obvious picks. And then she's also another thing that I thought was funny. Beyonce put a lot of black country artists on there, because, you know, of course, Beyoncé's not the first black person to do country music. There are a lot of people out there. And I think that, I think she did that sort of as a preemptive strike, so there wouldn't be anything pieces of how, like, from the woke people of like, well, light-skinned Beyoncé is trying to claim country over this dark-skinned, like, they'll do a whole Dr. Wendy, like, Housewives of Potomac colorism debate if she doesn't do that. So she put them in, and then even Kay Michelle, who was an R&B singer who was on Love and Hip Hop, and she's very talented. She's a little bit like Keisha Cole-ish. She has been trying to do country music for years and years. I'm not sure if she ever released her country album, but like, she's been doing the country lane for like a really fucking long time. And it was really shocking that she pivoted literally from like Keisha Cole style R&B to doing country music. And I think Beyoncé sent her like a, I don't know, like a PR package or flowers or a card or something, like, thanks for paving the way, girl. So Beyoncé has her team out there trying to like cover, every base. But Cowboy Carter is an interesting, you know, eclectic pop album, whereas like Lana Del Rey, like she makes like classic records, and they aren't really pop albums, but they appeal to a very pop audience, which I think is more to do with Lana Del Rey's image than the music, even though the music is incredible, and it does kind of cross like generations and age groups and stuff. A lot of the Lana Del Rey fandom, at least like the gay kind of, because she has such a huge gay following, I think that's more the image. Like, if someone that like wasn't beautiful and mysterious and glamorous like Lana Del Rey did those same songs, like, gay guys would just say it's boring, you know. Like, so they buy into the image a lot. But above the image, Lana Del Rey makes like classic albums. Like, Norman fucking Rockwell is probably, it might be like the best album of the decade. Like, I mean, it's a fucking masterpiece. It's like astonishing. And, you know, even the feedback on Cowboy Carter, I've been looking at the comments because I follow all of the urban blogs, and I'm checking, you know, Twitter, and they're all like kind of gravitating to whatever's the least country, like Bodyguard, which is like a disco tinge, like Kacey Musgraves sort of radio track. I do think that it will get an Album of the Year nomination. And I believe, and I thought this as soon as it happened, that when Jay-Z, you know, when he went viral, when he won that award at the last Grammys, and he's like, I can't believe Beyoncé hasn't won Album of the Year. I can't remember if he said it was racism or implied, or maybe he didn't. Maybe I'm just so used to, you know, the Garcelles of the world that I'm assuming everyone's saying that. But he was complaining about Beyoncé not getting Album of the Year, because Beyoncé, one thing about Beyoncé, she is obsessed with like accolades. She's obsessed with Grammys. Back again, when I used to cover her closely, she and her father, Matthew Knowles, would like pull so many tricks to just get her as many Grammys as possible. I fully believe that they were like doing crazy levels of schmoozing behind the scenes to like voters, and you know, was money exchanged? I don't know. But you know, Beyoncé has more Grammys than like Dolly Parton, and like, girl, you are, no one is gonna, like, no one's better than Dolly Parton. I'm sorry, like, please take a seat. Yes, I believe that Jay-Z did that. I think that was planned, and I think that was to put it out there that, like, you need to give Beyoncé her Album of the Year Grammy. And then Cowboy Carter is it's a Grammy type of album, because it's not full pop, but it's still commercial and safe. It's commercially successful, and, you know, it has, like, old school, you know, it's got Willie Nelson, it's got Dolly Parton, it's got like these old school greats on it, and it's from a black woman, so there's some diversity there. And I mean, it's just like kind of ticking all of the boxes. So I do believe that they have planned and calculated for this to win Album of the Year. I don't know what it's going to be up against, other than Lana Del Rey, who obviously, I'm sure if Lana Del Rey's up there, like, she should probably win. But I don't know, I almost think that like Lana's kind of too cool to be winning that stuff. Like, she doesn't really need it, you know? Whereas Beyonce is someone that thrives off of this stuff. So, like, maybe just, like, yeah, throw her an album of the year one. Certainly better than I think this album is more worthy than a lot of the album of the year stuff that Taylor Swift has got. Like, you know, I don't listen to much Taylor Swift anymore, but the albums all seem, you know, I listened to Midnights once or twice. It seemed pretty good from, like, what I heard. Like, don't even have anything, like, negative to say about it. It's more Taylor herself being annoying than the music. But I feel like there's way more effort put into this than some of the Taylor Swift albums. So, yeah, shout out Beyonce. Okay, let's talk about Dr. Huberman, the Dr. Huberman article in New York Magazine. So, Dr. Andrew Huberman is a really hot neuroscientist and Stanford professor. He's also one of the biggest health influencers out there. He has millions and millions of followers. He's co-signed by Joe Rogan, all of it. One of his most popular episodes was about the dangers of alcohol. He's very anti-alcohol, and it's probably been, like, very influential in this whole kind of growing sober movement that's everywhere. You know, the Kyle Richards and all of those people getting off the booze. I know people in real life now that are like, yeah, I don't drink anymore. I'm going to go sober. And he was probably part of that. So New York Mag ran a cover story about him being a real life love rat. It's all about how he's, like, cheating on all these women and just being a douche. It's really divided the internet. Although I would say, from what I've seen, at least more people seem to be on his side. Although maybe that's just because I tend to, like, follow the kinds of pages that would side with him. So I'm not sure, but one side of this argument is like, he's a psychopath, he's a pseudoscientist, thank God he was exposed, all these wellness alpha bros are grifters, etc. Then the other side of the coin is like, this is a hit job, it's a smear piece, they're trying to take him down, it has no credibility, what does his personal life have to do with, like, his expertise in health and wellness? I've been trying to soak this up for a few days just because I didn't want to do the, like, knee-jerk defense of the person being cancelled, which I usually do. It was more like, not that I found the allegations to be that damning or anything. I was just sort of trying to figure out, as someone that also works in media, someone that is, I have a journalism job, obviously, and then also I have a commentary type of thing that I do on my podcast where I have to criticize people. And I was just thinking of, like, Is this New York Mag article actually newsworthy? Was this worth being published? Is it in the public interest? Or is this literally just some fucking, like, cancel culture hit job? And we've seen so many of them over the last few years. So I just wanted to sit with it for a while. All right, so let's, like, just get into the allegations first. So he strung a bunch of women along and was cheating on all of them with each other. So the article named about, like, six, although they're very well, like, could have been more. I don't know how he juggled this many different women with, you know, his career and his podcasting. And then I'm sure, being a health bro, he has a very strict kind of, like, workout regimen and everything, but somehow he got it all done. He was pursuing IVF with one of the women. He may have also given her HPV, although in his defense, there's no proof in the article. It's kind of speculation, and they know that they can't prove it, so they just, like, put it in there to make you definitely think that it was him. But we don't really know much about these women, by the way. None of them name themselves, which seems to be a trend with these kind of articles. It's like, we'll call her Jessica. It's like, okay, so we don't know even who this person is that's making these allegations. So you don't get a chance to, like, cross-reference them and see what kind of person they are. Like, you could Google one of these girls and then find out, oh, look, she was, like, a bunny boiler that was, like, chasing various celebrities and, you know, pretended to be pregnant so she could get a check from an NFL player. Like, we don't know that. So these are anonymous women with no surnames, but he may have given one HPV. You know, it's his personal life, but he's all of the buzzwords, okay? He's definitely a cheater, a gaslighter, a manipulator, a narcissist, all the things that we call, like, shitty men. he seems to fulfill all of them, but it, you know, it stops at like me tooing. There's no physical abuse, there's no sexual abuse, there's no rape. It's just more like a very masterful cheater and just kind of like a fucking asshole. Like, he just doesn't sound like that great of a person, at least in this story. I'm sure there were people that had positive accounts, and they just haven't been included, but there is no debunking of his health advice, none. So you would think seeing like a big cover story about one of the world's leading online kind of health gurus, that they may say like, oh, he's been dishing out fake advice and he was getting kickbacks from certain companies to promote dangerous modalities, etc. There's none of that. They try to do it. They try really fucking hard. And they have nothing. And you know they would have scoured every podcast he's ever done to try and find something. Literally the best the author could come up with was that he does ads for Athletic Greens powders, except you can't even prove that Athletic Greens doesn't work. Like, look, you've got to be skeptical of a lot of supplements. I love supplements, but I find them to be kind of like an expensive indulgence, something that if you're Gwyneth Paltrow and you have the means to be able to enjoy all the, you know, all the different fun supplements. I've done the whole supplement thing for a while before, but really I'm like, I realized I was just throwing a lot of money down the drain without really knowing if this stuff works. I mean, I take like magnesium, there's certain like important things to take, but there's a lot of it that's just a bit like, okay. But there's no proof that Athletic Greens like is that it just does nothing for you. But that was like the best they had. The best they had was that he does ads for Athletic Greens. They also had some like stories about him being really flighty and weird. Like, they had one story in there. I don't really understand what relevance it had to anything, but he made plans with somebody once. They were meant to go hiking. It was like a guy that he knew. And then he just like left the guy at his house and like didn't show up. And then they went on a few, no, they were meant to go camping, and then they ended up going on a few short hikes together. that's one of the stories in there. The author was grasping. Now, you can tell that this article was like the worst of the worst that she could find on this guy. And most of it was just like, okay, this guy is kind of weird and douchey, until it got up to the cheating. And then you were like, oh, and he's a cheater too. Okay. So the women that he was cheating on, they all ended up finding each other. I can't remember how, like one of them went through his phone or his diary or something, and then she found one of the women, and then it kind of led to the others. And then they all realized they were being played. And instead of being like, oh, wow, so, you know, this guy's been lying and cheating on me with multiple women, let me just dump him and kind of move on with my life. Instead, they started a group chat together where they just kind of obsessed over Huberman and like discussed their trauma. It's the most female kind of subreddit thing to do. Like, yeah, I'm not going to move on with my life. Let me instead create like a group on like the internet or like a group chat, and we'll just be fixated on this one person all day. Yeah, that sounds healthy. I was almost thinking like, do these women want to get their own show or something? I mean, you never know. Armie Hammer's wife is on a reality show now. Armie Hammer's wife is literally on this new show that's coming out called, it's like, I don't know, The Secrets of the Cayman Islands, or like Cayman Islands Luxury Party Town, some like stupid name like that. And it's just about like a group of singles that like hook up and hang out in the Cayman Islands. So I don't know, maybe these women want to get their own show or their own like, you know, Netflix docuseries. I love these true crime ones. From the producers of House of Hammer comes Falling for Dr. Huberman, How the World's Most Famous Neuroscientist Destroyed These Women's Lives. Like, I don't know. I don't know if they're shopping something or pitching something. Probably after this article, they are. Actually, I would bet money on it that at least a couple of the women in the group. One of them was an actress. Again, they didn't name her. She's probably fucking pitching a project and taking some meetings. So this article kind of shows the worst of both men and women, because it's like, well, men are cheating, lying, sex addict pigs like Dr. Huberman, and women are just like crazy bunny boilers who create group chats to like obsess over people. And get this, the woman that wrote the article, she too was obsessed with Huberman, which is so funny, because Saga and Jetty on Breaking Points, I recommend Breaking Points a lot for people that want, it's just much better. It's much better daily American news than any of like the cable stuff. So shout out Breaking Points. He's done a defense of Huberman, but he got some leaked emails and they were from her, and she was like gushing over Dr. Huberman and saying how like his advice changed her life for the better. And she started, you know, following his tips and advice and how incredible it was. And then he didn't respond to her request for an interview to do a feature story. So then at some point, after he declined, things took a turn, and then she ends up digging up all these scorned women from Reddit. Literally, I'm not like joking. She actually went through Reddit and social media comments and tracked them down. And then, you know, it became an article about taking down Dr. Huberman. I think there's a few reasons that people are really defending him on this one. One, there is like a lot of fatigue on cancel culture, especially with a story like this that like doesn't have anything that juicy. Like, this isn't Diddy, okay? Because I know people are very into the Diddy thing, as I mentioned earlier, but this isn't Diddy stuff. Like, when the Diddy Cassie lawsuit dropped, it was like, holy fuck, like he was like abusing her, you know, taking her to these sex parties, tried to blow up Kid Cudi's car, and now more stuff has come out on top of that. The FBI are like raiding his mansions. Like, there's some juice there. This essentially boils down to famous celebrity podcaster cheated on multiple women. Like, okay. It's not related to his work. He's not even like a relationship guru. Like, it would be more relevant if he was like a Christian relationship guru that had this really pure image, and then it would be like, oh, look at that, you know, that this goes very counter to that. I even did a fun, like a trashy story at the Daily Mail before about the two hosts of that podcast, Girls Gone Bible, because they were like sexy actresses and influencers before they did it. And like, I don't know if they've had a true, you know, Christian awakening, or if it was a ploy for fame, or maybe it's like both. The article wasn't that serious to me that I did. It was definitely, I did it in a more tongue-in-cheek, fun way, because I'm never trying to like destroy anyone. So I was just more having fun with like, look, these super Christian girls were like Hollywood hotties before in like sexy movies and stuff, you know? A lot of us probably feel like this has been targeted because he's in the online alternative health space. There's always been vitriolic attacks on alternative health, but throughout COVID, like the masks really came off, so to speak. And we really saw a lot of things for what they really are. Like, we saw the failures of mainstream health and science. We saw the lies and lies being forced on us. We saw manipulated data to, you know, push this on us. We saw the shoddy fucking vaccine that's not really even a real vaccine. It doesn't function in the way that a vaccine should. It doesn't stop you from getting it. So I don't know what it's vaccinating you against. We saw the vilification of anybody that strayed from this and questioned from this. And, you know, they were all called conspiracy theorists, and many of the conspiracy theorists were, you know, proven right on this. And once you've seen that, you say, well, what else do they lie about? And even before the whole COVID thing, I mean, there's plenty of credible documentaries in the health space about what they do with the factory farming and all of the, you know, hormones they put in the food. I mean, there's so much stuff that's just very easily provable. But yeah, anything that is in alt food, alt health, etc., gets you painted as a quack, which is so funny. And now alternative health has been so associated with the right and conservatism now, you know, for so many decades alternative health was a left-wing hippie thing, and now suddenly it's a trait of right-wing culture. Like, getting sunlight and not eating processed foods and not wanting to take a stupid COVID vaccine against your will makes you like a right-wing nut job, apparently. And I did look up this journalist's old stories because I kind of just had a feeling because, you know, being in media and watching who tends to be behind these stories and the personality profile and stuff, I'm like, let me see if this person has like a thing against, you know, conservatives or against alt health or anything. And she's full libtard, obsessed with the usual topics, you know, obsessed with January 6th, obsessed with like, you know, exposing QAnon people. She did mask her 6-year-old child. I found an old tweet of that. Can you recommend a mask for a 6-year-old? And then someone sent her a link or whatever. And she was like, well, I've been doing this for over a year. I'm like, okay, so you had this poor kid in a mask since he was 5. She fits the bill of the snaky liberal journalist who is motivated by need to take down anything that's like right-wing coded. And the way that she gushed over Huberman before like switching up and then writing this like scorned woman piece, it's a little fishy. And it almost feels like she maybe built up like some kind of parasocial relationship with him. That is why I think there's a lot of intense hatred on these kind of hate pages that I was discussing with Brandy and Julie, because with podcasters, people do form a very intimate connection. And it's like, yeah, I think a lot of haters are like former fans. And you do see that a lot. Like, I've seen a lot of people that have been cancelled or attacked, and you see a lot of the comments in these kind of groups, and it's like, I was a fan for years. And then, you know, so there's always a weird personal thing to that. Now, with all of that said, do I think this article deserved to be written and published? Yeah, I do. It's tabloid gossip. It shouldn't be treated as, you know, anything that we're going to win like a Pulitzer for. But it's a fun, gossipy article about someone that's very famous and very influential, and we're getting a peek into their private life as we would from any tabloid. We do these stories on celebrities and public figures all the time, even on Hunter Biden. I mean, I would argue that the Hunter Biden thing is more relevant because of the political ties, but of course, a lot of the Hunter Biden coverage, if you go across, you know, the money that he was getting for the influence, etc., a lot of it was just like, oh, look, he's a crackhead and he's fucking all these hookers and stuff. And we all kind of enjoyed looking into it. So I don't know why Dr. Huberman would be off the table given the current standard of going through, you know, celebrities' dirty laundry and putting it everywhere. And I guess if you were like a longtime fan of his, it would be a very interesting read of like, oh, okay, I've listened to this guy for a couple of years now and I've taken his advice, and is this what his personal life is really like? You know, I'm not even mad at the journalist, even though I do think she was coming from, I mean, look, I can't say, look, let's be fair. I can't say if she came from a biased place, if she is just a libtard wanting to like cancel someone. Maybe she is just a talented, inquisitive journalist that was like, oh, look, let's give her the benefit of the doubt. She's like, look, here's this guy, super influential, super famous, has become the biggest name in health, has a lot of credibility. And in real life, he's, you know, a weirdo that cheats on all these women and strings them along, etc. I think when it comes to these kind of stories, the onus is more on us to react appropriately and proportionally rather than either canceling the subject of the piece, or if we're on the side of the subject, the one that's sort of being cancelled, for us to then try and cancel the writer or the magazine or say this magazine shouldn't exist, you should lose your job. I mean, look, some people should lose their fucking job. But in general, I think we just need to like read this stuff and react normally. Like during 2020, when cancel culture was peaking, you know, it did not take that much to completely destroy somebody. And if they had released this article around like the peak of the sort of Me Too fever, he may have like lost everything. I mean, Stanford, by the way, kind of defends him in the piece, because she has something in there about how his like lab doesn't really get used, and they're just like, he's actually like just moving the lab to like a different department. That's why it's been empty. But yeah, he could have gotten cancelled a few years ago, but now I think people are actually reacting more rationally to this because we've all been through the cancel culture thing and realized that it was just horrible and it wasn't healthy for anybody, and it didn't really serve any good purpose. And yeah, you have to remember, like, this isn't a story about how his advice was fake and that he was getting paid to promote supplements that were causing people cancer and that he is just a complete fraud and grifter. I mean, everyone, for the most part, seems to verify his advice, and so many people have been helped by it. Like, this is literally just a tabloid feature about a celebrity love rat. Like, this is kind of on the level of something, like, it's better written than a tabloid newspaper, obviously, because it's in New York Magazine, but it's essentially a weekend read in the Sun newspaper. Okay, they can dress it up however they want, but this is basically like Rebecca Luz tells all on her racy romp with David Beckham. Like, that's pretty much what this is. And if you're a female listener of his, maybe you won't want to support his content anymore. Maybe it's like personally triggering for you because you have dated guys that do this kind of shit. And you're like, you know what? I don't want my downloads going to him when there are so many people in this health space anyway. So you could probably, maybe other people aren't as good as him, but you know, there's a lot of good people out there that do are in this lane. So you could switch to that. So we can all support who we want to support based on, you know, whatever our fucking values are. For me, with this Dr. Huberman, I was not really familiar with him before. And I read the story and I was like, okay, he sounds like a douche, but this health advice seems great. And now I'm following him and I was looking him up and I was reading comments from people that he's helped and seeing some of the viral stuff that he did. And I'm like, okay, great. Like, I couldn't give a fuck how many people he's cheated on. Like, if the health advice is good, it's good. I mean, I still watch, I still watch Woody Allen movies. I still watch Roman Polanski movies. Like, they're fantastic. Like, they're amazing. I still listen to Michael Jackson. I listen to R. Kelly. Like, yeah, I'm not going to drop Dr. Huberman because he cheated on on a few women. Like, if the product is good, it's good. Now, would I pay money to go see R. Kelly or whatever, like, in concert? No. But yeah, am I gonna like watch some of the videos on YouTube or whatever and like listen when I'm getting ready? Yeah, I am. The elephant in the room as well is that most gifted people are problematic. Like, I feel like we have to say this every time this happens, but it's like, you don't become exceptional at something without having abnormal tendencies, like narcissism for one. That would be the main one, would be narcissism and kind of personality disorders. And then you add fame into the mix, which isn't healthy, but like, you can't be average and a genius. Like, these people on these hate pages, like, you're not gonna be Dr. Huberman with like 10 million followers because you're an average kind of person. Like, you're not exceptional, like, you're not gifted, you don't have charisma. And nothing in this gossipy article is that alarming, being beyond like, okay, this is a like, ladies, you probably don't want to date this guy. And yeah, I'm not against them publishing it, like I said. I just kind of read it because I saw it was getting all this, you know, there was a lot of hoopla around it. It was very viral over the last week. And when I finally read the whole thing, it was like a Kanye shrug from me. Like, okay, so on one hand, we have serial womanizer versus helped thousands, if not millions of people drastically improve their physical and mental health. Okay. Had a negative impact on some women he dated versus positively impacted millions across the world. Oh, which side am I going to choose? But seriously, like, unless you're like Jimmy Savile, like, I'm not going to be that scandalized by whatever's coming out about you, okay? Like, these shoddy little kind of like takedowns that are getting rolled out all the time, they're not that impactful. Like, Jeffrey Epstein, like, the Epstein puppets got away with what they did. I'm seeing the most horrific stuff that I've ever seen in my entire life from so many politicians in different countries post October 7. They're, you know, still fucking with Julian Assange. Like, I'm meant to care about a podcaster who like has helped like a bunch of people get sober and like, you know, get out in the sun in the morning. Like, sorry, no, it's not making a blip. Rolling Stone magazine has kind of been on a tear over the last year or two with these like little cancel profiles. Rolling Stone is essentially just a cancel people publication where they select a celebrity at random. You kind of never know who it's going to be, and they try to ruin them. And I don't think many of these profiles are sticking to people. The one that pissed me off the most was this whole campaign they had against Sam Levinson and The Idol, which I was enraged about. And they really tried to paint him, not just Rolling Stone, but other publications too, but they all really tried to paint him as sexually exploitive. And in reality, it just came out recently that I think HBO, from some of the pressure to drop Sam Levinson, they almost considered firing him. And then the actresses from Euphoria, like Zendaya and Sydney Sweeney and some others, all got together and they were like, no, you're not firing him. So it's like, you have these fucking profiles from these, you know, grifting social climbing journalists who are trying to get a hit story and, you know, become the next Taylor Lorenz. You have them trying to act like there's sex pests everywhere on set. And then it's like the actual actresses are like, no, like, we're fine. Like, that happened all throughout The Idol. Like, they kept trying to cancel The Idol, and then the stars of The Idol were like coming out in interviews going, we had a great time on set. Like, what are you talking about? So you kind of have to take some of these things with a grain of salt. The latest Rolling Stone pieces are on, they did JVN, Jonathan Van Ness. And look, that was an interesting read because it had drama between like, just casting drama. Basically, just all these fucking gay guys on Queer Eye were like all fighting, and you know, of course they were like Real Housewives. And JVN is apparently like a terror on set, which is hilarious. And you know, I got a kick out of it, especially because his like brand is the complete opposite of that. Like, his whole brand is like smiles and sunshine and sweetness. But I wasn't surprised that he seems to be a horror show in real life. But I don't know, like, he has that podcast Getting Curious where, what does he do? Like, he'll interview Kamala Harris or something. I mean, if you like that content, keep listening to it. Or if you like his, I don't know, his hair tutorials, like, all right, he's a bitch behind the scenes. I don't know. I guess if you were super invested in it, like, I guess if you bought into the thing that he's like this nice person, maybe you'd be upset. I could tell he was a cunt after the Dax Shepard interview where he flipped out and started crying because he got pushback on like the trans agenda, and then he was trying to make Dax Shepard look bad. I was like, okay, I've got your number, bitch. And then they did one on Shangela from Drag Race. I didn't read the whole thing, but it was kind of like Shangela kept pressuring me to have sex, but I said no. And then that's all that happened. And it was like, okay, is this worth like a Rolling Stone feature? Just ridiculous. I mean, it's all like, it's all Dumois posts at the end of the day. So treat it for what it is. So while everybody has been obsessed with Diddy, I am really obsessed with Candace Owens being fired from Daily Wire for criticizing Israel, or for anti-Semitism, I guess, depending on what you believe in the situation. This has been my Kate Middleton. This has been what has taken up a lot of my time online. I'm just super into like political pundit drama. It's one of my like favorite niche interests. I look at it like reality television, you know, who's getting hired and fired and what show are they going on next, etc. So yeah, hypocritical right wingers are turning into triggered leftists. We love to see it. October 7 has been like the best litmus test for that. Like, you're finding out who on the right actually supports free speech and who doesn't, and like barely any of them do. Like, I was not really surprised by anybody. And even before this, I'd already shifted to listening to a lot of like independence and more like libertarian leaning stuff. And then I listened to like Breaking Points and The Hill Rising, which sort of has a left and a right perspective. I'd already stopped listening to like Megyn Kelly. I haven't listened to The Daily Wire in years and years, etc. So, yeah, I was not listening to anybody like that, but it was just funny to see everybody that made their brand being about like anti-cancel culture and like free speech suddenly just want to like shut down anybody that criticizes what the, you know, right-wing Israeli government is doing. Yeah, I've really had to align with the hardcore progressives and the libertarians over the last 6 months because everyone's just been terrible. But Candace Owens has been a pleasant surprise. I have been hypercritical of her in the past. If you've listened to this podcast for a long time, I've done a lot of kind of Candace Owens like segments before, I guess. And I did follow her from when she was a YouTuber through to like when she started getting really famous and when she joined Daily Wire. So I feel like I saw the trajectory of the trajectory getting tongue tied here. From when she was like a small fry on YouTube to becoming this like political superstar and one of the biggest ones in the country. And I did always see her as someone that just wanted to be famous and was putting on an act, because I remember when she came out, she really was just copying the talking points of Blair White and Dave Rubin, who at the time they were like, I mean, Blair, they're both still around and doing stuff, but they were two of the most popular and the early adopters of that kind of online YouTube, like, politically incorrect anti-woke commentary. And they had a lot of attention because Blair White is transgender and Dave Rubin is gay. So that was their shtick. Like, I'm gay, but I'm not a leftist. I'm transgender, but I'm not a leftist. So Candace Owens kind of took all of their same talking points and was like, I'm a black female, but I'm not a leftist, right? It felt very calculated to me. But what I've seen in recent years is that she has been having a mixture of like better takes on things, but then also just like riskier takes that are like surprising in a way that just feels more kind of like authentic and going against the grain. So she'd come out against the COVID vaccine really early on. I didn't care so much about the vaccine. I was just fully against the mandates, like the Daily Wire and Ben Shapiro were. They were against the mandates, but they did support the vax early on as well. Candace was just like a never vaxxer. Like, as soon as they had that fucking COVID vaccine, she was like, hell no. And she went out on a limb and it was very, very controversial at the time. And then, you know, her Black Lives Matter takes, I think, aged really well for the most part. Not all of them, but like a lot of them did. And then with Israel and Gaza, she was like the first person on that part of the conservative world. Well, maybe like her and Tucker Carlson were like the first to kind of like say something. And Candace came out quite early on saying that like killing children is bad. If they're Israeli or Palestinian, killing children is bad, which that should just be like not a controversial statement, but it actually is for many people. So she was denounced early on just for saying, please don't kill Palestinian children and women. And she kind of got denounced by the David Horowitz Foundation. They basically created her. So they're a pro-Israel conservative group. They found her on YouTube. They brought her to like their conference, and that's where she started connecting with people and like growing her brand. I'm not sure if they put money behind her. I mean, certainly at some point there was money put behind her to kind of make her into, you know, a weapon for the conservative American right, and to have her out on, you know, Fox News and do the talking head stuff. And then eventually it led to Daily Wire because they saw the potential in having, you know, an articulate, strong, fiery black woman going against the left. And I think since becoming a mother and getting married, she has actually started to develop her own worldview, a bit like getting off the hamster wheel of, you know, having to do the Fox News talking heads and having to do the Daily Wire shows every day, to like get off that hamster wheel and then take a minute to catch your breath and to have a baby, which is a profoundly life-changing experience. And she said that being a mother is one of the reasons she's been so distraught over what she's seen happening in Gaza. I think she took a breath and was like, wait, who am I and what actually do I believe in? And I think probably being in the political machine, the star-making machine, she's seen how fake a lot of it is too. And I think she was doing fake things as well. And Many of us were expecting her to get fired from the Daily Wire, like the second that she even expressed any empathy to the Palestinians. Like even when she had that tweet about like, it's sad to kill Palestinian kids. I'm like, oh, she's fired, because, you know, a lot of people were getting fired at that time and still are. But then when she actually was fired, it was shocking because they had kind of vowed to stand by her and it was like she'd got through the worst of it. And it was like, damn, like they're actually gonna stick by her. And I kind of thought that was pretty brave of the Daily. Of course, now it's like they were just plotting to get rid of her. But yeah, and I was very kind of invested in her journey there because I'm also someone that works in the media and I felt a lot of stress and I felt very triggered and everything when it was happening at the start because, you know, I've been following it very closely and I was shocked by everything. And then because, you know, because you work in the media, you can't say certain things. And there was like a ABC journalist that got fired in Australia and, you know, it was crazy. And it was like, damn, like I was on the brink of like coming over here and doing the visa thing. And I'm like, this is like the worst thing I've ever seen. And I do post about it and everything. And I felt compelled to speak about it, but I also felt like my hands were tied and I felt like I had to be so careful in the way that I phrased anything. Cause if I do the phrasing wrong, then, you know, you can lose your job. Like it actually happens to people. It's not like in my head. Like maybe I was more paranoid than I needed to be, but like this is, it's a thing. Like even shout out New York Mag, they did a piece about it very early on of how many dismissals there were for people that, you know, weren't on a certain side of it. Now, of course, the reasoning for firing her is that they're saying that, you know, she was anti-Semitic, which I think is such bullshit because she's been inflammatory to all groups for years. She has said very provocative things and things that many people deem racist, things that many people deem transphobic or homophobic. She said so much stuff about the black community, the LGBT community. And then it's like, okay, so she gets the full support of the Daily Wire and the conservative movement for like everything she says. And then as soon as she speaks out against Israel in the context of like what's got, it's not like she just randomly brought up Israel out of nowhere. It's in the context of what's happening between Israel and Hamas in Gaza. Now they're clutching their straws and now suddenly she's anti-Semitic. Yeah, come on, give me a break. I mean, the thing that they've like tried to pin on her is that she tweeted Christ is King. And I guess they're saying that's an anti-Semitic slur. I mean, I've never heard that. Of course, you know, maybe it is. But then again, this is coming from the right wingers who say they're all about free speech. They're the ones that mock lefties for being offended by everything. So for them to suddenly be upset over Christ as King, that's giving like Garcelle Dorit, like, don't raise your voice to me because that's a microaggression. So, yeah, it's outrageous and it's hypocritical and it just shows that they're completely full of shit. They will let anything be said about any group. And then if you say it about their group, like you're done for. And she has barely even said that much. Like a lot of it, I think, is pretty tepid statements, at least compared to the sort of libertarians and the progressives that I've been listening to for the last 6 months. You know, I feel like she doesn't even go that far. And she's very smart in the way that she brings things up because she always does make sure to sort of cross all of her T's and dot her I's. Like she'll always make sure she's condemning Hamas like constantly and calling October 7 a tragedy, which obviously it is, but she makes sure that she kind of constantly repeats it because there's certain, it's just hard. You've got to like couch everything in that so you won't get pinned with the anti-Semitic label. And yeah, again, even if she did say anti-Semitic things, it's still unfair to fire her given that she could say anything she wanted about the black and trans community. And I know some people brought up that she talked about like groups of Jewish people in DC or whatever, but like she has had groups come out against her. I mean, she's had the ADL come out against her, the David Horowitz Foundation, and saying that they want her fired and stuff. So, I mean, is it that conspiratorial if they, the groups themselves are coming out saying deplatform Candace Owens, and she says, you know, pro-Israel groups are coming after me. I'll give you my hot take on why she actually was fired. This is my controversial take, and my take is that it's not actually what she said herself at all. It is actually what she allowed other people to say on her platform, which is what got her in trouble. Because she was saying a lot of stuff for a while, and Daily Wire was still standing by her, but she had Dave Smith on. He is a Jewish libertarian. I always recommend him on Instagram and on the podcast. Sometimes he has done the best Israel-Palestine debates out there. He knows the history. He's very likable. He is Jewish, and he's, like, you know, approved by Megyn Kelly and Joe Rogan and all of the big kind of right-leaning pundits. So it's like he's a very potent weapon against Zionism, because people on the right will listen to him. And I always make sure that I recommend him on my Instagram, because I do have a lot of right-leaning followers. And it's like, if I post the, you know, the black leftist woman that is sticking up for Palestine or whatever, like, that's just not going to be received in the same way as if I do someone like Dave Smith, who people on the right can connect to, and who is Jewish, so he can't just be smeared as anti-Semitic. So yeah, Candace had him on her show, and she let him do all of his talking points to her, like, million listeners, and to discuss the situation, and then she is exposing his show on her platform, which is very libertarian, very, like, anti-Daily Wire. And it's something that I think his show is a show that would resonate with a lot of her listeners. And her platforming him would have had Ben Shapiro's head spinning. And Shapiro will not debate Dave Smith, by the way. Dave Smith has tried to debate Ben Shapiro, but he will not. And Dave Smith's pretty much won all the debates that he's done quite easily. And Candace has been doing a lot of debates, which has made me respect her a lot. Like, I mean, look, her job is kind of to be, this is the job of, like, what it means to be in this political arena, is you're kind of paid to do, like, WWE wrestling fighting about politics. Like, that's what the women on The View do. That's what MSNBC contributors do. That's what Fox News people do. Like, you get paid to argue with people. So I guess I shouldn't be that surprised that she's having people of all sides on, but she's had a lot of pro-Israel people on her show as well. And she was getting challenges from, like, rabbis and stuff, like, hey, you know, Candace, let me on your show so I can debate you, and you're missing the point with this Israel issue. And she's like, sure, come on the show. And one of the last episodes she had on was a rabbi, a conservative rabbi, and he didn't come off great. You know, for example, Candace was there condemning Hamas, condemning October 7, saying this is absolutely horrific what happened to these innocent, you know, Israelis on October 7th. This is terrible. And it's also really horrible to see innocent Palestinians killed. And then she asked the rabbi, she's like, can you condemn it as well? And he doesn't condemn it. He dodges the question. Then he says, Candace, we are so upset for what they force us to do to them. We cry every day for what they force us to do to them. And there was a lot of sound, but I'm not going to go through them all. Don't want to get in trouble. You can listen for yourself. But she gave him a platform to speak his views freely. And I would say he didn't come off that well. And, you know, on top of all of this, on top of the Dave Smith of it all and the rabbi, she has started making a lot of inroads in the black community just recently, because she's always been hated by the black community. She's been called, you know, a race traitor and an Uncle Tom and all of these horrible names. And she recently did back-to-back appearances, essentially, on the Joe Budden podcast and The Breakfast Club, you know, with Charlamagne. They are the two biggest black platforms out there. The Breakfast Club, definitely the most influential black radio program. You know, everyone listens to The Breakfast Club. It's awesome. And Joe Budden is, like, one of the top black podcasters. He is huge. And she was very well received from both appearances, at least considering where she was to how much people hated her, to the reception she got this time. Like, I like to check the comments on things, on the YouTube comments and the Instagram comments, etc., to see what the people are thinking and feeling. And like, with Candace's appearances on like Breakfast Club, it was like 50-50, which for her is huge. It used to be like 99% hate against her. It's straight up 50-50 now, with people saying that they, you know, black people saying they love her, and, you know, people are trying to smear her and that they respect what she's doing. You would have never seen that before. And this is why she was fired. Her influence and her reach was growing a lot, and it was growing beyond the Daily Wire. And the guests that she was hosting did not make one side of this debate look good at all. And if you're Candace Owens and you're going to use your platform, which is to a Daily Wire audience, and you're going to put on people like that, and you're going to have that audience maybe start to switch sides, or at least maybe shift into the middle of it, that's not good for that side that wants a lot of support, because it's like the lefties are already pro-Palestine. A lot of the libertarians are, or the libertarians are just like, we shouldn't be intervening either way. We're not pro anything, but they're not pro-Israel. They're not pro, you know, giving all this money away. The younger generation, clearly, Gen Z, are pro-Palestine. That's why they're trying to fucking ban TikTok now, because they're like, no, you're supposed to be watching MSNBC and Fox. Like, what are you doing on TikTok getting videos of what's going on in the ground? Get off there. Most of the international community is on Palestine's side. So, you know, the biggest supporter of the Israeli side is like American Christian conservative evangelicals, and that's who the Daily Wire audience is, and that's who Candace was reaching with her show. So I fully believe that's definitely why she got out, as opposed to sort of what she herself was saying. And look, I'm not fully sold on Candace yet, but since her exit from Daily Wire, she's gone down this stupid evangelical Christian path, which is horrible, where she's like turning it into this like holy war between Christians and Jews, which is fucking ridiculous, and going on about how like Christians are being attacked. And it's like, girl, what are you doing? Like, you just left Daily Wire, and what, you left Daily Wire to now do a holy war instead of just making the argument about the moral right and wrong of what is going on over there, and, you know, where our tax dollars are going, etc. You want to turn it into like Christians are being persecuted and there's a war on Christmas, like this bullshit. And I feel like she's kind of actually doing that intentionally, so she doesn't have to get into the specifics of it, because, yeah, a lot of her criticism was really not that major. It was only major compared to like that audience where you can't say anything against it, but just in general, in terms of the reality of what's happening versus what she says, she hasn't even said that much. So yeah, I hope she gets it together and stops going on about Christianity. I mean, go on about Christianity, but like, don't make this issue about Christians versus Jews. Make this, you know, about foreign policy and right and wrong. And yeah, I'll be really disappointed if she's left Daily Wire and she started to, like, you know, it looks like she's becoming more independent and having, you know, her own opinions on things and maybe shifting in the right direction on some good stuff. And then where she ends up going is being some like anti-Semitic evangelical Christian freak that's just screaming about like Jews and gays. It's like, no, girl, don't prove them all right. Don't turn into that, please. Please just go the Tucker Carlson route, please. Like, become the Tucker Carlson. That's where you need to be. It's kind of like, it's independent. You can dabble in some fun conspiracies. I did enjoy Candace doing the French First Lady being a man. That was fun, you know. Get into that and then speak some truth to power and like free speech and all of that. We want you down the Tucker Carlson route. We don't want you to be like gross, you know, Milo Yiannopoulos, like crawling around Telegram group chats saying horrific things. Please don't turn into that girl. Anyway, guys, thanks for listening. This episode went longer than expected, but I really wanted to talk about all of these topics. So now I have. There's more content on Patreon, as always, patreon.com/unpopularjp, and I'll probably see you with another episode on this free main feed in, you know, maybe a week or two. Bye.